Competition at home and abroad will affect Uber's profit margins in the medium term. Thibaut Samphal, the boss of Uber's French operations, admits that ride-hailing could be a high-volume, low-margin business. It's transportation. It's like retail. For the time being, investors are willing to accept these low margins as Uber pursues growth above all else. But their patience may wear thin if the intense competition drags on. Amazon built up its business at a time when few competitors shared its vision of the size of the e-commerce opportunity. Uber does not operate in a world of low expectations. One wildcard is whether Lyft remains an independent company. There have been reports it has been seeking a buyer. In 2014, Uber might have been that buyer, something that has not been previously reported. Negotiations fell apart over price. Mr. Kalanick insists he does not regret the outcome. It's a really powerful thing for a company to compete. It makes you fierce about serving your customer. Having a rival also helps deflect regulators' scrutiny. Yet many of Uber's investors wish the two had gone forward with a deal so that Uber would not have to keep battling for share. If the competition can be won with money and determination, Uber has to be well positioned. It was not the first firm to recognise the potential of peer-to-peer ride-sharing. Sidecar, a now-defunct start-up in San Francisco, got the ball rolling. Lyft came next. But Mr. Kalanick used the momentum achieved by raising a lot of capital and expanding rapidly to great effect. Uber's huge cash pile now acts as an almost unassailable barrier to new entrants, says Sunil Paul, the founder of Sidecar. And even with $9 billion, Mr. Kalanick does not rule out the possibility of asking investors for more. If the money is there, that means my competitors will raise it, and that means I need to as well. However dominant Uber's position may be, Mr. Kalanick will not let up. He always sees himself as an underdog, says Tuan Pham, Uber's chief technology officer. Uber is not Mr. Kalanick's first startup. That was Scour, a file-sharing firm which filed for bankruptcy in 2000 after being sued by media companies for $250 billion for copyright infringement. He sold his second startup to Akamai, an internet firm, for a modest $15 million. Those experiences left him obsessed with details and intensely focused on improvement. He enforces a feedback system called T3B3, top three, bottom three skills, requiring his deputies to give him brutally honest feedback. He changes himself faster than we can change our algorithms, says Mr. Pham. In the T3B3 process, he shared his observation that Mr. Kalanick should thank people more. Now, apparently, he does. Uber also has shown a capacity for change. It launched Uber X when many employees at the company thought it should not risk disrupting its black car service by offering a cheaper option. And this August, after years spent ploughing huge amounts of money into its business in China, it announced that it was merging its Chinese business with that of a local rival, Didi Chuxing, in return for a fifth of the new firm, worth around $7 billion today. Investors were thrilled. They had worried that Uber would continue to lose billions of dollars chasing its Chinese dream. Mr. Kalanick is extremely secretive about Uber's financial data, but in the first two quarters of 2016, with $2.1 billion in revenue, the company lost at least $1.3 billion, according to reports, and there are good reasons to think that a lot of that was lost in China. Now Uber can share in the growth of the Chinese market without spending another dime. Having sorted China out, Uber is able to concentrate on promising pickings in other developing markets, where governments may not be quite as determined as China's was to see a local firm win out. In India, Southeast Asia and Latin America, rates of car ownership are low. Just as consumers in emerging markets leapfrogged the desktop internet and went straight to mobile devices, they could choose to bypass buying a car and move around via ride-hailing instead. Mr. Jonas of Morgan Stanley reckons that by 2030, around 25% of miles travelled in India will be on ride-hailing and ride-sharing services. Fares in these markets will be lower. In Mumbai, a commuter's hour-and-a-half Uber costs 500 rupees, that's $7.50. But the size of the population means there will be a lot of transactions. At the moment, Uber is the underdog in India, lagging Ola, its local rival. Its huge cash resources mean that it is still a competitor, though. In Mexico and Brazil, it is the leader. And as a global brand, it will be best placed to serve the small but disproportionately lucrative global business clientele. To distinguish itself from its competitors, Uber is investing heavily in developing its own mapping capabilities by buying assets, including the mapping startup Dakarta, and hoovering up talent from Google. Uber dreams big but not as broad as Google, says Brian McClendon, a high-profile hire from Google who now runs Uber's mapping team.